our show today is about self-love. And the question is our lack of self-love creating a more hostile world? Geoffrey McClung, a personal growth author, self-love teacher, and common sense activist, looks at today's anger and blame as a cry for help. She answered, it will only grow in its intensity and negatively impacting not only the quality of our personal daily lives, but our society as a whole. Geoffrey is an author, teacher, independent filmmaker who started a career in theater in New York City as a performer and producer. She worked as a senior media producer in New York City for over 15 years before moving back to Texas in 2007 to care for her mother. She's published two books, The Heart of the Matter, a workbook and guide to finding your way back to self-love, and How Learning to Say Goodbye Taught Me How to Live, a spiritual memoir. She is currently working on her third book, How I Found Self-Love, which will include The Heart of the Matter Guide, as well as her personal story of looking for self-love. She has appeared on CBS Austin and has been heard on Hay House Radio and many other radio shows and podcasts. So it's my pleasure today to welcome to the show Geoffrey McClung. Hey, Geoffrey, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Wynn. I'm so happy to be with you.
Okay, so would you define for me and our audience, what is self-love?
Yes, I will define that for you. The way I talk about it in the book is that it is knowing in your core being, not your personality per se, but your core being, that you are lovable, loving, and loved. Your core being knows that you are lovable, loving, and loved.
Okay, so you said, I believe, there's a great percentage of us that hate ourselves. We have negative feelings about ourselves, and that would not fit in the definition that you just gave, would it?
No, it would not. I do see a lot of people hurting and lacking in self-love. And let me just go a little bit deeper on the definition. When I say lovable, loving, and love, what I mean by that, Wynn, is lovable means that you know you are worthy of love in the universe's eyes. You exist, therefore you are worthy of love, period. Lovable, worthy of love. Loving, that you express your heart, your creative, beneficial heart, is more than good enough. Whether it's through business or relationships or creativity, the way you express your beneficial heart is more than good enough. And loved simply means that because you exist, you matter and you have value to the universe. Not for what you've done, not for what you will do, but because you are you. So that those three areas are the areas that I focus on within the book, and people are lacking in those areas.
Well, you know, we're having a lot of riots these days, and people are angry, and I think a lot of people don't love themselves, and they certainly hate other people. It's getting to be quite a problem, isn't it?
Yeah, I do think it's a problem, but I think in a weird way that the protests, I prefer to call them protests, and the rioters are very few. They're less than 0.01%. But the protesters is a good sign that we are moving forward. But we do have a lot of lack of self-love. That's where the blame comes in, the pointing fingers, it's your fault. You look at our politics, it's full of that. And that all comes from the lack of self-love, like you said.
Well, so what would be your recommendation as to improving self-love in yourself?
Well, I would say, first of all, you need to admit to yourself that you're lacking in self-love. A lot of us walk around with our mask on and our defenses up and our bravado that, yes, I love myself. Yes, I love myself. No one better mess with me. That's really not self-love. That's defensiveness. I think the first thing is you got to admit that you're lacking in self-love and you need to grow in that area. Because when you put that out to the universe, you'll get the answers you need. You'll be driven to the books you need to read, to the tapes you need to listen to or whatnot. But I would say the first thing is you need to admit you're lacking in self-love, that perhaps you don't feel worthy of love, that you need to earn love from other people, or you don't feel like you're good enough in expressing your loving heart, or that you don't feel like you matter to the universe. If you're lacking in one of those areas, you need to admit that you're lacking in self-love.
Well, the opposite of self-love is self-hate, is it not?
Well, I would say that's, yeah, I would agree with you on that. I think it is the lack of self-love is self-loathing, self-hatred, self-criticism, self-judgment, all those things that we tend to do in our heads every day without even paying attention to it. I do think the lack of self-love is that self-loathing voice in your head, that self-loathing in your, that I've got to get it from the outside world because if I don't get it from the outside world, I won't have it. And you need to start with yourself first and find it within yourself. And then when you get love or value from the outside world, it's the cherry on top of the sundae versus trying to be the whole sundae.
I had a friend a while back that said, I hate myself. If it wasn't for the fact that my mother is still alive, I would kill myself. That's pretty strong, isn't it?
Well, that definitely is going to a deeper level of self-hatred where you do want to leave the planet. I'm glad his mother was still there. I hope he's done some homework on himself. But we do have a lot of that energy of, well, you know, life is so hard, life is so rough. I have nothing on my side. I'm all on my own. I don't like myself. Therefore, I might as well leave the planet. And I think that's really sad. I mean, we've all had those dark moments. I certainly have had my dark nights of the soul where you just feel like you might as well leave the planet. There's nothing you can do. But if you work through those moments and keep doing the homework, you can change that viewpoint and find your self-love. I think if he'd had just a little piece of self-love, and I think he has it because he's still on the planet. If you're still on the planet, you have a piece of self-love deep inside of you. If you left the planet, you don't have it anymore, frankly. I hope that answers your question you were asking me.
Okay. What would you consider the real reasons that people loathe themselves or hate themselves?
Well, I think we're taught that from a very early age, frankly. I think depending on your religion, your background, your politics, or your family, we're taught to look for everything outside of ourselves. Look for your worthiness outside of yourself through your job, your relationship, your money, your status. Look for your sense of beneficial heart outside of yourself. Did someone appreciate you, recognize you? Do you matter and have value? Well, you got to earn it in the outside world. We're told from the very beginning, from the time we're little, look to the outside world to find your worth, your value, your sense of being good enough. And frankly, you do that, you're going to hit against a wall because people change, people leave you, you lose jobs, you lose money, and you don't need to go down the rabbit hole because of those things. That doesn't mean you don't have to feel those things, but you don't need to feel like you're not lovable enough or loving or loved enough because you hit those barriers, those boundaries, those challenges in our life. And I think from the very beginning, we're told to look outside of ourselves for our worth, or we're told we're born wrong to earn it from the universe or God or whatever your religion. I think those are very detrimental to us.
Well, you may or may not know that I've been helping people with addictive behaviors for 30 years, and I have found that practically everybody that has an addictive behavior also has low self-esteem, and they don't value them as a person, and so therefore they're able to do things that would hurt themselves. Now, getting the correct amount of self-esteem can be a problem if one doesn't know how to go about doing that. But if for the people who have a spiritual basis and believe in God, a creator of the universe, and furthermore, if they believe that you are a spiritual son or daughter of God, then you can't really feel bad about yourself because you have the characteristics of the Creator to a certain extent, and that can't be bad. So I try to teach people that they need to try to get to a higher level of consciousness, a consciousness that tells the truth, which is you are perfectly fine as you are. You're fearlessly and wonderfully made, and so therefore you should value yourself. Do you think that that's enough by itself to get into the self-love that you're talking about?
Well, I think that certainly is a good step. The way you said it was beautiful. You are a piece of the divine. We all have a piece of higher self within us as well that has not forgotten that it has a piece of the divine within. As I say in the book, it carries within it all the knowledge and power of that love. If we can start to realize that we come into this world with everything we need for our particular journey, if you can come up with that belief and then come with a belief that you are a piece of the divine, having a human experience at the moment, it would help you greatly. Now, most of us have pieces of that, and then we have the opposite information in our heads as well. I think you said that quite beautifully, that we are a piece of the divine, having a human experience and having challenges. An addiction is strictly a challenge. Somebody else may have reading challenges. Somebody else may have mental challenges. We all have different challenges that we've come here to overcome and to wrestle with. And I think to start off with the belief that you are a piece of the divine, therefore no challenge can do you in because you have everything you need inside of you, is a good way to start that journey of self-love.
Right. Well, what would be your first step in reconnecting with self-love?
Well, I would say once you've decided that you need to bump up your self-love, and frankly, I have not met anybody who cannot bump it up. I'm continually bumping mine up. I would say start to ask yourself the questions. I say ask yourself why. Why do I believe what I believe? Who told me that? Did my parents tell me that? Did my teachers tell me that? Did religious leaders tell me that? Figure out who told you that, and did it make their life any better? That I have tons of questions in the book that I spend a lot of time asking myself. Why do I believe that? Why do I believe I have to do this to earn the universe's attention or love or help or support? Why do I believe that? And when I broke those down, I realized I was just picking up someone else's beliefs and making them my own beliefs. You have the power to rewrite your beliefs and make the beliefs more expansive in love, more creative, and more grand in a sense, and not keeping you restricted and small. So I would say ask yourself, why do you believe what you believe? Why do you feel what you feel? Those two things can really open you up to understanding what's running your agenda inside of you, keeping those critical voices going forward on you. If you can figure out those questions, answer honestly. You got to be answering honestly with yourself. That should begin to give you some good information on the things you do want to change.
Well, how will our lives change when we reconnect with self-love? What we can expect to be different?
Oh, it's quite, I have to say, having done the journey myself, it's quite wonderful. I do want to mention that when you connect to self-love, you do it in layers. It takes work to do this, to do your inner work. Just like anything good that you do, it takes some work and diligence. But if you're willing to do the work and diligence and do it in layers, because I would do some healing on my wounds or belief work, and I would hit a new level and feel like my life was going well. And then a few months down the line or even a year down the line, I'd get some other information that would smack me in the face and realize I need to go deeper. So do know that it happens in layers. But I would say each layer shows you that your work is working, that this inner work, looking inward, asking yourself the questions, willing to feel your emotions, actually is impacting your life. So those layers are really good to keep you moving forward. And each layer opens up new joy, new happiness, new sense of empowerment. Because when you can change a negative belief to a positive belief and begin to see that positive belief out in the world being reflected back at you, it really empowers you. You say, I can do even deeper work, more heavy-duty lifting on my beliefs. When you feel your emotions and you be able to transform transform your negative emotion into a more loving emotion. That empowers you. So it's that sense of empowerment is quite delightful, I must say, Wen. It was something I had not expected. I just wanted out of that critical voice in my head. But that sense of empowerment, knowing you can change yourself, is quite magnificent.
Well, we may be covering something that you already said, but if you look out there in society and see a person, what characteristics would you see if that person truly loved themselves?
Well, I think you would see somebody who is compassionate, because as I was working on self-love, I had to practice compassion with myself, and the more I practiced compassion with myself, the more compassion I had for other people. Did not start out that way, didn't go for that route, but that's what happened. When I practiced self-appreciation, I had more appreciation of other people. So I think you will find when somebody's walking around with self-love, they're more compassionate, they're more appreciative of other people, they're more gracious because they practice graciousness with themselves. They have more gratitude because they practice self-gratitude with themselves. I think you find somebody who's less judgmental, because I think judgments come from our own self-judgment, so we put it out into the world to judge others. So I think you would find somebody who's less judgmental, much more compassionate, much more empathetic, and much more kind, frankly, to other people.
Well, you said the word empathetic. To have empathy for somebody means that you understand where they're at and what's going on, right?
Exactly, because when you've done the inner work and you've looked at your shadow, the parts of yourself you don't want to own, when you've looked at your wounds, the parts that you maybe shoved down because you didn't feel like they were going to impact you, and yet they ended up impacting you. When you look at those areas and on those negative beliefs, how they made you behave towards other people, when you look at those and find that compassion, understanding, when you meet somebody else who's wrestling perhaps with their own bully or their own issues out in the world, you can have empathy for them because you've had empathy with yourself, knowing that's how you behaved when you were in pain or fear. Empathy is real important, and I think that's part of what we're leaping to during these protest days and through our what we're seeing in the outer world. And even though it's scary and we're tired of people blaming each other and pointing fingers and all of that sort of thing, I think really in a way it's leaping us up to having more compassion and more empathy for other people. But it starts with yourself first, Wen. It starts with yourself.
Well, I've noticed personally that in previous years, when I was completely healthy, I would look at people in wheelchairs or with canes or walkers or this kind of stuff, and it wouldn't even come to my mind of what they go through every day. But then, after I had a couple of back operations and couldn't walk well or as well as I wanted to and everything like that, my whole perspective of looking at other people with that type of disability changed. And I know that's just one aspect, but I think that if you have a problem, you can see another person who has that problem and feel their pain and suffering a lot more.
Oh, I totally agree with you. And what a great gift, in a weird way, I hate to say this, a great gift that back was for you, because it gave you more empathy for people who do struggle with physical challenges. So that's using the idea of using what's happening in your life that may appear challenging or disrupting your life as being negative and realizing there's always something positive if you're willing to look for it. And so interestingly enough, your back issue actually helped you grow in your sense of empathy. So that's a good thing.
Right. I always thought it was a good thing. It's just it wasn't expected. I didn't expect to change my attitude about other people. But when I had the same thing, it automatically changed my attitude about other people.
Of course it did. That's why I was saying when I practiced I practiced self-compassion myself. I did all that so I could get to self-love. I didn't expect to grow in my compassion for other people. That was not the goal, but I'm real happy it happened. So I do understand what you're saying, you know, that you was not expected when you had the back surgery, but what a great gift it became.
Right. Well, let's tell our audience about your book, The Heart of the Matter. Can you do a book report?
Well, I can try my best, Wynn. The Heart of the Matter is basically a workbook and guide. It has discussions in each chapter of what self-love is. Lovable, I go into what lovable means. Loving, I go into what that means. It goes in three parts. The first part are your three tools. We all have everything we need. We talk about the three tools we have for this journey, which are your emotions, your higher self, and your imagination combined with meditation. When you have those three tools, you can change anything within you. The second part of the book is the lovable, loving, and loved. Those are the three areas you need to focus on. And the third part of the book is working with your orphans, the part of yourselves that were wounded when you were a child or when you were an adolescent that are still impacting your life today. How to work with those parts of yourself, how to heal them, to love them, and transform them. Each chapter has questions. These questions are really important. I don't care. You may not do everything in the book. You may just do the questions. That's good enough for you. That's fine. It has questions, and then it has a meditation. And meditation is strictly focusing your attention. You don't have to light candles. You don't have to chant. You don't have to sit in a certain position. I sometimes did them in a hot tub. You can do it any way you want. But meditation combined with your imagination can change anything within you. And then it has the final thoughts, and then finally it has some homework. If you want to do the entire work, it has homework, meaning paying attention to your outside world, because as you're changing your inside, you're going to be looking at your outside world to see what's being mirrored back at you. That's what I did. This is basically the things I did to change myself.
Okay, you mentioned something that I'd like to go to for a second. You mentioned your inner orphan, and I'd like a better description of what you mean by that and how it's important as far as your journey went.
Well, the way I describe inner orphan is it is the part of you that was wounded or hurt, that you've ignored, or you've shoved down, or you've forgotten about, frankly. It's the part of you that responds when something's going bad at work and overreacts. It's a part of you that has your fist up ready for a confrontation wherever you go. It's the part of you that says, no one's going to do that stuff to me again. These are the parts that need your attention, need your healing, need your love. When I worked with my orphans, I met them individually, and they were all small. They were 5, 6, 7 years old. And I met with them and I listened to them. Some were screaming at me and yelling, and I would just listen to them. Others would hide behind a tree. Others would run up and lay in my lap and just want to be held. Each orphan has a different way of behaving with you, and you need to allow them to behave with you the way they need to behave. You don't need to tell them how to behave. You need to listen to them, pay attention, and then you need to start talking to them and helping them understand that some of the things they believe are lies. They're lies, and they are lovable, and they are loving, and they are loved. And you get them to believe that and let go of being in charge. These orphans tend to be in charge in your life, waiting for, you know, to put their fist up to fight back. You need to let them know they don't need to be in charge anymore, that you're awake now and you're in charge. The orphan is great work. It changed everything because I did it with the intention of adding more love to my life. So I listened patiently, sometimes for a few months to one orphan, until I could get them to understand they were lovable and that I did have their back and they could let go of being in charge. It was really quite transformational work, frankly.
Well, the concept, your inner orphan, that's a metaphysical concept, isn't it? You don't get that from your walking around sensations, do you?
No, I just called it that, frankly, because that's the term my higher self used when I was in meditation. She would say, go talk to this orphan over here. You need to work with your, you know, I thought, okay, I got an orphan. And I call it orphan because these are parts we've forgotten about. What happened when I was 5, 6, or 7 doesn't matter, but it does, because when you're young is when you start to form your belief system about yourself, your place in the world, and how the world is going to treat you. That's where your negative beliefs begin. So I do think it's really important to look back at that primary time in your life. So orphan, yeah, it's not something I'd heard a lot of, but it's really what my higher self called these parts of myself. So I used it in the book.
Okay. When you're talking about things that happened to you earlier in life as you were starting to grow up and everything, I'm sure that that forms a part of the background of your low self-esteem, because you were hurt, taken advantage of, or all kinds of other kind of things that makes you feel less important, less valuable. And so what you're saying is you need to think about those and expose the lies that come with those bad experiences and try to say to yourself, well, I did get hurt, I was bullied, I was taken advantage of, but I'm still a worthwhile person. None of that has changed the fact that I am, as you say, lovable. And so you have to, in your mind, go back and refute those lies, don't you?
Yes, you do. And what I did, frankly, is I went back and I actually visualized, saw them as young people. So I would sit, you know, in my meditation, sit there and talk to them, and I would wrap my arms around them. You can do this sitting in a chair. You don't have to go into a deep meditation, but you need to start offering love to yourself, not just talking to your head, but talking to your heart. So much of our work is in the head, but you've got to change your heart. And heart means wrapping your arms around yourself, wrapping your arms around the 5-year-old who was hurt. Maybe they just need to be heard that it hurt them. It really hurt them. And you need to go, I know it did. I'm so sorry that happened to you. And wrap your arms around them in meditation and let them know that you love them and you're sorry that happened to them. In other words, you're offering love to your heart and offering the ideas of removing the lies to your head, so your heart and head are in sync. That is really imperative, that your heart and head are in sync.
Well, I think that if we all did what you're talking about, we would have less time on the psychiatrist's couch or in the psychologist's office. My own personal opinion there, but I believe that your healing is within you. You just have to know how to approach it.
Oh, I totally agree with you on that. I mean, look, we were raised by parents who no one knew how to deal with their feelings. No one knew how to deal with beliefs. And they passed on their information, you know, to each generation. I think we're the first generation, in a sense, of saying, hey, we can look inward ourselves and make these changes and offer love to ourselves and listen to ourselves. That's the trick, listening to yourself in a meditative space. Again, meditation is just focusing your attention, but listening to yourself without judgment, without trying to tell them, oh, well, you need to get over it. Well, no, that part of you needs to be heard, just like you need to be heard as an adult. That part of you needs to be heard. And offering that love is really key. At the end of every meditation, I make every meditation end with a big dose of love, because maybe you're clearing rage or anger or hurt, and those are painful feelings, but you need to feel them and get them up and moving. Once you've vented those feelings of hurt, anger, or rage, you need to transform them with love. So you need to spend some time at the end of a meditation adding more love. That's why the first three chapters we do in the book is really creating that love space, so you know what love feels like to you, so you can offer it to those orphaned parts of yourself. I do agree, if we did this work on our own, there would be a lot less psychiatrist visits, frankly.
Yeah. Well, I thought, since I've had an extensive amount of research into some of the things that are done with and for various types of addictive personalities that in the 12-step program, they give you a chance to speak your truth without anybody jumping down your throat. And if that's all there was, if you could do that once a week or twice a week or whatever, you would have a totally different idea about how to approach life than if you never had a chance to be able to speak your truth. And the other thing is, if you received hugs from people, that would also make a big impact in your life. I know psychiatrists and psychologists say that hugging is important. And the more hugs you get, the better off you do with your mental health. And I think I believe that.
Oh, I believe that, but I'm agreeing with you, Tully, but I'm saying you can do it for yourself as well. You can give hugs to yourself as well. Like you said, speaking your truth and then offering a hug. Well, that's basically what I talk about in the book, frankly. Listening to these orphan parts, listening to them, telling them that they're believing lies and we need to transform those lies. But then offering them a big hug and big love and big kisses all over the face. Whatever way they need to receive love, they need to receive it. I did this when I was not in a relationship and I felt more loved by offering love to myself than I did in a relationship, frankly. I still do this daily. I talk kindly to myself. I offer hugs to myself every day. It makes a huge difference. And instead of looking outside of ourselves for these things, you need to learn to offer these things to yourself. Then when you do get it in the outside world, it's the cherry on top of the sundae.
Well, Joffrey, if people don't have a lot of self-love, if they have self-hate and everything, I think they ought to pick up a copy of your book and try to learn how to go from one to the other. Will you tell our audience about how they can get a copy of your book and your website or whatever information you would want them to take out of this interview for contact with you?
Oh, certainly. And just know that my new book, it'll be out maybe in 6 months, will have my personal story in it. So if I can do it with the baggage I carried, anybody can do it, frankly. You can go to my website and read some free excerpts from both my books and see if it's something you're interested in. My website is joffreymcclung.com, or you can just type in itsallaboutselflove.com, T-S, allaboutselflove.com. It'll take you right to my website. You can read some experts. You can read my blogs. I have one-minute videos on my blogs to keep you focused on your inner work. But it will tell you where to go to buy the book, and hopefully you will buy the book. I would greatly appreciate it.
Joffrey, your spelling of your name is not that simple. Would you give them your spelling so that...
Oh, certainly. If you want to do it by my name, it's J-O-F-F, Frank, R-E-M-C-C-L-U-N-G, Joffrey McClung.
Great.
But again, you can just type in itsallaboutselflove.com. It'll take you right to my website.
Allaboutselflove.com. Okay. It's been great talking with you today, and I want to give you an opportunity now as we're getting ready to close the program. There's probably something important that I missed. Do you have any parting words or thoughts that you want to leave with your audience?
Well, I think we've said it all, but I will put it this way. You do have everything you need already inside of you. You may not feel like you do, but you really do have everything you need. And you are lovable, you are loving, and you are loved beyond belief.
Yes, that's right. And you don't have to be in a relationship to be loved.
No, absolutely not.
That's a bonus, but if you're just looking around to the outside for someone who is going to make you feel loved, I think you're looking at the wrong perspective.
I totally agree with you. Love has to do, knowing that you are valuable and you matter to the universe. Whether you live on top of the mountain all by yourself, you're around thousands of people. You matter and have value.
Yes, all lives matter. Well, Joffrey, it's been great talking with you today, and When you get your next book out, would you do another program with me, I hope?
Oh, I certainly will. I really had a good time when it was a good conversation.
Yes. Well, the last thing I want to say is that I have a podcast that's totally free. It's got scores and scores and scores of different interviews with people like yourselves and people not like yourselves, but always interesting things to talk about. And you can go there by going to www.freedomfromaddiction.libsyn.com. No spaces, all lowercase. That will take you to the most recent program. So if you go there as soon as we finish with this and get it up, you'll hear Joffrey's program. And then you can scroll down and say, well, this is one I'd like to hear, or past the ones that you don't think you have any interest in. But I put a lot of time and effort over the years. This is the longest running radio internet talk show in the country. And so you can benefit from my desire to help you find peace of mind, love in your life, and all the kind of good things that you're looking for. So I'll end with that. And once again, thank you for being on with me today.
Thank you.